for argument case numbers 85756 and 86128. So not sure if all of you were in the room when we started the prior argument, but as you saw in the notice of the oral argument, we are trying something new this month, which is giving an extra 2 minutes to each side, and that 2 minutes is an initial 2 minutes uninterrupted during each party's argument. So we will discipline ourselves not to interrupt, and you get that first 2 minutes uninterrupted. With that, counsel, why don't you come on up and tell me if you would like to reserve any time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Justice Kadish. For the record, I'm Greg Zanino, representing the Nevada State Board of Pharmacy. I'm the Senior General Counsel for the board. And I would like to reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal. I'd also like to introduce my colleague, Mr. Brett Kant, who is General Counsel of the board. With your permission, I will share time with Mr. Kant. So Mr. Kant would handle the rebuttal. I would handle the opening. And if all goes according to plan, I'll conclude my opening at about the 10-minute mark, leaving 7 minutes of rebuttal to Mr. Kant. So on the topic of the will of the voters, when the voters approved marijuana via the initiative process, they voted for a strictly regulated market. Nothing in the text of the ballot question suggests that the voters wanted unregulated marijuana. The voters spoke, and the legislature listened, and consequently, over the course of about a decade, the legislature enacted a great deal of implementing legislation, including a robust criminal justice component. And that robust criminal justice component serves a very important purpose of deterring activity or commerce in the unregulated market. Contrary to the district court's conclusion, the regulatory scheme includes a limited role for the Nevada State Board of Pharmacy, the role of scheduling marijuana as a controlled substance. This makes perfect sense. If not the Board of Pharmacy, then who? The Board of Pharmacy, after all, are the experts in pharmacology. And aside from whether marijuana belongs in Schedule 1 or Schedule 5 or somewhere in between, and that this is a question of fact that was not explored below, the district court's legal conclusion was erroneous in this case. According to the district court, Nevada law evolved over a period of decade or over a period of decade or more, and at some point in time, impliedly divested the Board of Pharmacy of its historic authority to regulate and to schedule marijuana. This is, I would submit, an indefensible conclusion. According to every canon of statutory construction that might conceivably apply here, the district court's conclusion is incorrect as a matter of law. And this leads me to the topic of standing. Admittedly, the Board of Pharmacy's scheduling role intersects in a minor way with the criminal justice component of the regulatory scheme. But in most cases, the board's decision to schedule marijuana in Schedule 1 as opposed to Schedule 5 or somewhere in between makes no difference to the punishment that a person receives for an offense involving contraband marijuana. The trafficking statute, for example.
Can you repeat what you just said about the schedule doesn't make a difference? Doesn't that determine the category of offense based on the schedule?
In rare cases, it does. In most cases, it does not. So, for example, the trafficking statute, which is NRS 453-339, separates marijuana into its own category. It's a subset of controlled substances, and it's marijuana alone that is punished, or a crime involving trafficking in marijuana is punished as such. In rare cases, there's a slight difference between and typically with it, and this involves, for example, possession with intent to sell. For a second offense, the punishment or the crime could be punishable as a Category C felony as opposed to a Category D felony. But that's only with respect to a second offense. And these statutes in particular are found at NRS 453, 337, and 338. If you line those up side by side, you'll see that as a general rule, it doesn't matter where marijuana is scheduled, you know, unless there's a second offense.
Could you comment on the inconsistency between the constitutional provision, which directs that the legislature shall provide by law for the use by a patient of, upon the advice of his physician, et cetera, of cannabis for medical use, and then the definition in 453.166 of Schedule 1 that says, among other things, that the board shall place a substance in Schedule 1 if it finds that the substance has no acceptable medical use for treatment in the United States. When I lay those two provisions side by side, it seems to me the voters are saying they're contemplating that there is a medical use for marijuana and the legislature shall provide for that. So it's inconsistent for the board to put it in Schedule 1. I'm leaving aside Schedules 2, 3, 4, but just the Schedule 1 statute seems inconsistent with the medical marijuana constitutional provision. And I would just add quickly that medicine can be as much art as science. I mean, like, the medical uses evolve over time from, you know, historically people did bizarre things, doctors did bizarre things in the name of medicine. And it seems to me the voters have said this is something that should be permitted by doctors and the legislature shall provide for it.
So I don't think there's an inconsistency between, because we're talking about two separate systems, essentially. So a patient can obtain marijuana upon the advice of a physician through a dispensary. The Board of Pharmacy regulates ultimately the practice of pharmacy, and that involves kind of chains of interstate commerce that flow through pharmacies.
But what the pharmacy board is authorized to do by statute is to make factual findings based on the principles and requirements laid out by the legislature, as we discussed in the Lukman case quite some time ago. And so as a factual matter, Schedule 1 requires, as Justice Pickering said, that there be no accepted medical use. That's the predicate factual finding that has to be there. And if factually, in fact, Constitution seems to set forth that there are, in fact, accepted medical uses, how can both those things be true at once?
So I agree with you, Justice Kedish, that whether marijuana has a medical use is a question of fact, right, that would ordinarily be considered by the Board of Pharmacy, often pursuant to a petition filed where someone would request an amendment or a revision of a regulation. Here, at the district court level, there were no findings of fact made, right? This was couched as a legal issue, strictly whether the Nevada Constitution and or implementing statutes divest the Board of Pharmacy of any and all authority to schedule marijuana. And that's ultimately what the district court concluded, that the Board of Pharmacy has no authority to schedule marijuana, regardless of whether it may go. And so I agree with you that this is a finding of fact, but that the factual findings didn't occur at the district court level. There were no evidentiary presentations. There were no findings as to whether marijuana is accepted or not accepted
United States. Do you read this 353.166 to be the limit of what the board can put into Schedule 1? In other words, it specifies the board shall place a substance in Schedule 1 if it finds high potential for abuse and has no accepted medical use or lacks accepted safety. Are there other types of drugs that could be put into Schedule 1 by the board that don't fit those criteria in that statute? Or is that the exclusive statement of what can be in Schedule 1?
The Board of Pharmacy considers the federal scheduling for obvious reasons, because most of the drugs, pharmaceutical drugs in particular, are distributed in interstate commerce. So to a large degree, the Board of Pharmacy has to kind of respect scheduling determinations that are made at the federal level. It has to kind of respect the national consensus as to whether marijuana has accepted medical uses.
So are you saying that the board can put a drug into Schedule 1 even if it doesn't meet the criteria in 453-166?
It can put... No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if the consensus among the several states and the federal government is that medical marijuana or that marijuana has no accepted medical use, and if the board makes findings that to that effect, then it can put it in Schedule 1, just like many, many other states have done.
How can that finding be consistent with the Constitution?
I think the Constitution contemplates kind of a separate system. And you can glean that from the language of the constitutional provision itself when it talks about obtaining marijuana on the advice of a physician as opposed to via prescription. So prescription is a term of art in the law of pharmacy, and it means that something has been FDA approved for distribution in interstate commerce. And that a doctor has issued an order to a pharmacy. So that's what the definition of pharmacy or prescription is. It means an order issued by a doctor to a pharmacy. Yeah. That's not what happens with marijuana. I mean, the doctor can simply say to the patient, I think you would benefit from using marijuana. Go down and visit the local dispensary and get yourself some marijuana. And I think that's what happens in reality. So there's no actual conflict between anything that the Board of Pharmacy is doing and the Nevada Constitution, which it kind of on a high level says, we think that medical marijuana has value.
You also address standing. Are you deferring that to co-counsel?
So I planned, Your Honor, to address standing. I think this court adopted a three-part test recently in 2023 for evaluating standing. That comes from the Lujan case. And I think that the third part of that standing analysis, redressability, is dispositive as to all of the various theories of standing that the respondents have advanced in this case. And by my count, they've advanced roughly four different theories of standing. All can be disposed of under the redressability standard. And that's because the district court's decision here does not remedy or redress the alleged injuries. All of the alleged injuries in one way or another trace back directly to the criminal justice system and to criminal convictions. And the criminal justice system is effectively a closed system. I mean, if you want to challenge your conviction or challenge the validity of your conviction, there are specific ways to do that. You have to file a direct appeal or you have to file a petition for habeas corpus.
That's not the relief they're asking for in this case. They're not asking to overturn a criminal conviction.
No, and I guess that's my point is obtaining an order that directs the Board of Pharmacy to remove marijuana from the controlled substance schedules does nothing to redress the alleged harm, which is the collateral consequences associated with convictions. It's the inability to get a job, for example, because of a conviction. It's the inability, presumably, to obtain clemency or get a pardon and the Schedule 1 listing has no bearing upon any one of those things. I mean, a criminal conviction stands as proof of its own validity. And whatever consequences flow from that criminal conviction are not attributable to anything that the Board of Pharmacy does. I mean, there are judges ultimately who hear these cases and who are empowered to decide whether a charge is unconstitutional, for example. And that's why we require criminal defendants to go through the criminal process, the direct appeal process, or the habeas process in order to challenge the validity of the conviction. Here, the district court's order simply doesn't redress any of the injuries to the extent that the respondents are expressing fears about future arrests or prosecution. I would submit that the order does not redress that as well, because the district attorneys of the state are not bound by the decision in the district court. They were not joined as indispensable parties. There's simply no way to bind them to the district court's decision here. So that order does not redress their fears about being arrested at some point in the future or being prosecuted at some point in the future. They would have had to join a criminal justice agency in order to have that or take any effect.
But if medical marijuana is put into Schedule 1 and it's inconsistent with the Constitution, wouldn't that affect future prosecutions of somebody who wants to use marijuana medically?
It could.
Schedule one is a worse offense. It's a higher.
It could affect future prosecutions, but it would be up to the judge in that particular case to decide how or if it affected the prosecution. I don't think, you know, that the district court in one fell swoop can just say, criminal justice agencies, you can no longer prosecute marijuana offenses as a violation involving a controlled substance. That's,
but as a Schedule One, can it do that?
I think the district court in any given criminal case could say, you know, gee, I think that this should be somewhere else. It shouldn't be in Schedule One. But that's something that would have to take place within the context of the criminal proceedings. It's not something that you know, we shouldn't try to bind.
Isn't it really a determination of the legislature what is, not the district court, but the legislature, what is a criminal offense? They could exempt marijuana from prosecution in the same way, which they have, largely as in the same way that other Schedule One drugs are prosecuted. The legislature has chosen to use the schedules as a convenience in the criminal system, but they're not required to do that.
No, and the legislature has, you know, in enacting NRS Chapter 453, enacted a rather intricate scheme, right? And all these different statutes kind of fit together. And for better or worse, they've left the scheduling determination to the Board of Pharmacy. And I think that was a very deliberate choice that they made. I mean, I don't see anything in the statutes that suggest to me that the Board of Pharmacy doesn't have that scheduling function. If the legislature had wanted to take that scheduling function away from them, they could easily have done that by listing that in along with alcohol as the other things that the Board of Pharmacy does not have scheduling authority over.
We've got less than a minute of time left. Yeah. Do you want to reserve it?
I will reserve it.
Okay.
Thank you, Justice Cage.
Chris Peterson from the ACLU of Nevada, representing plaintiffs CEIC and Antoine Poole, if it may please the court. In 2000, and again in 2016, Nevada voters passed ballot initiatives that changed the way Nevada regulated cannabis. The 2000 measure amended our constitution to include a right to use cannabis to treat certain medical conditions. The 2016 measure legalized cannabis for recreational use, but it also enacted a comprehensive regulatory plan for the cannabis trade in the state of Nevada. We're here because the board has ignored the fact that these ballot measures have impacted their regulatory authority over cannabis. They continue to schedule cannabis as a Schedule One substance, claim it had no use for accepted use for medical treatment in the United States, despite the passage of Article 4, Section 38. And they continue to regulate cannabis, even though they have no role in the comprehensive plan that was passed by the voters in 2016. Now, the board's list of Schedule One substances is meant for the most dangerous drugs that cannot be distributed under any circumstances in our state. However, their continued scheduling of cannabis as a Schedule One substance conflicts with what the voters voted for on four separate occasions, ultimately resulting in cannabis being used for medical purposes, legalizing its use for recreational purposes, and again, implementing a comprehensive plan that covered every aspect of the cannabis trade in Nevada. Unfortunately, law enforcement agencies, such as the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department and district attorney's offices across the state, continue to arrest and prosecute people based on criminal offenses predicated upon the board's continued regulation of cannabis. I have two more sentences. All right. Where was I on that? Subjecting them to criminal offenses that were meant to be reserved for the most serious drugs, such as methamphetamine and heroin, the inconsistency between what the voters voted for and what's going on the ground in these prosecutions and in the board's regulation is ultimately a result of agency overreach twice over. First, in continuing to regulate cannabis as a Schedule One substance, despite the passage of Article 4, Section 38, and then continue to regulate cannabis, even though they no longer have a role to regulate in that subject matter.
Mr. Peterson, I'd like to just jump to standing really quickly.
Yes.
How would granting the relief you are requesting, that is to deschedule marijuana, how is that going to redress CEIC's or Mr. Poole's injuries?
So I actually think the easiest place to start with standing is actually with the public importance doctrine, because the board actually did not contradict the district court's finding in its opening brief, indicating it waived that issue. But if you look at the requirements themselves, it's clear the CEIC satisfies those requirements. This is clearly an issue of public importance. The board has never disputed that. They, in their own docketing statement, described this as a statewide issue. It's a constitutional issue. But also on top of that, if you look at their reply to the motion to stay that they filed before the district court, they talk about the public importance, about how this will impact the entire criminal legal system in the state of Nevada if this is being removed from their regulatory authority. Then you look at the appropriate party. CEIC is clearly an appropriate party under the standard presented in MPRI. They are clearly have the correct motivations in which to litigate this case. They have been adversarial throughout this entire proceeding. And they have shown the skills to manage this case, seen by the fact they prevailed on all legal issues down before the district court. So the question is this an expenditures issue or a separation of powers issue? This is a separation of powers issue. The board itself describes itself as engaging in a legislative function when it regulates cannabis as a Schedule I substance. It said so very clearly in its own brief. Now, of course, an executive agency can engage in a legislative function that's been delegated to it appropriately by the legislature. But if it's now acting outside of what's been delegated, that becomes a separation of powers issue because it's engaging in a function belonging to a separate branch unlawfully. There are two additional limitations this court has placed upon.
What's the other branch?
That would be the legislature branch.
And
so it would be the executive branch is engaging in a legislative function outside of the authority that's been delegated to it. Okay. Article 4, Section 38, obviously the legislature could not delegate the authority to the executive branch to violate the Constitution. And then when we talk about the repeal of its authority to regulate cannabis entirely after the passage of the initiative to regulate and tax marijuana, then of course it's simply acting outside of its authority entirely.
And are you saying that the board can't I guess you're saying that they can't even regulate marijuana, but let's assume that, setting that aside, if they can regulate marijuana, could they schedule marijuana as a Schedule 2, 3, 4, 5 drug, or is it just the scheduling as a Schedule 1 drug is the problem?
So we've offered two independent grounds for removing cannabis from those schedules, the Schedule 1 substance. Under our grounds related to Article 4, Section 38, it would have to be removed from Schedule 1, but it could potentially be on a different schedule. Under our grounds related to the initiative to regulate and tax marijuana, followed by the enactment of NRS Title 56, or the recodifying, that would remove that scheduling authority entirely from the board because it could not regulate cannabis at all.
But where in Title 56 does it say that?
Although it's disfavored, implicit repeal can happen, as this court has indicated before, when there's a comprehensive regulatory plan that's put in place that supersedes the previous regulatory authority. And we're seeing that here. We have four different chapters of the NRS dedicated entirely towards the regulation of cannabis.
But where in Chapter 56 does it say anything about schedule?
So scheduling necessarily is a regulatory power from the board. So it's not addressed directly. It would be an implicit repeal. And so in turn, but the board's scheduling of cannabis inherently conflicts with the regulation that's being imposed by the Cannabis Compliance Board, starting with the simple fact, if it's posted out there, I don't think there's any other substance that's on the list of schedules that can be used for recreational use, for example. And already the Schedule 1 designation is already conflicting with the regulation regarding the idea of medical use and also that it be safely distributed.
There can still be criminal uses of marijuana, even with the legalization that's happened.
That's correct. And we're not arguing that the statutes that specifically say that certain acts are criminalized if you use marijuana in that particular way are going to be repealed. We're saying that the board's authority to regulate marijuana has been appealed.
Okay.
And to be clear, there are a number of provisions, including inside of Title 56, that lists a number of activities that you cannot engage in with marijuana. So, for example, 678D310 makes it unlawful to give marijuana to a minor, right, and give different criminal penalties. There's also provisions in 678A that make it unlawful to sell marijuana without a license, but the penalty for that is a civil penalty, similar to what would happen if you were selling alcohol without a license.
So, but Title 56, when that was enacted, so there,
I'm certainly no expert in this area, but my understanding is initially Department of Taxation was given regulatory authority, and then from subsequent changes, there were changes and the Cannabis Compliance Board was implemented. And it's clear under Title 56 that now, instead of the Department of Taxation, Cannabis Compliance Board has the regulatory authority. But that was done explicitly. But there wasn't something explicit like that saying, and by the way, Pharmacy Board, this can no longer be within your purview.
No, it would be an implicit repeal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think something that's important to note is that this is probably the most comprehensive regulatory plan that's ever been enacted through a ballot initiative in this state. Again, covering the full range of what's going on there. And I think it's also important to note, even if it didn't specifically say and rewrite portions of the board's authority directly, it's important that they are not included in this plan at all. They're not referenced a single time in the entire
Let's assume for a moment you're right, and it can't be on any of those schedules, that the Board of Pharmacy doesn't have authority to put it on any of those schedules. Does that necessarily mean that illegal possession of marijuana couldn't be prosecuted under Chapter 453?
No, Your Honor. It just would simply repeal their authority to regulate it. So it would take their ability to put on a schedule. But if there's a statute inside NRS 453 or Chapter NRS 453 that specifically refers to the criminalization of an act with marijuana, that would still be good law. I think something else that's important to note, since this is a passage of an initiative, the voters didn't have the authority to reorganize the NRS. So simply because there's provisions inside NRS or Chapter NRS 453, that doesn't necessarily mean the intent was to leave regulatory authority with the board.
I feel like this is a little bit on its head, though, because the Board of Pharmacy just sorts out what buckets they think particular medications go in, right? And there's certain forms of marijuana that are in Schedule 1. There's actually forms in the other schedules that can be prescribed, right? But the legislature decides what is and isn't a crime. The legislature could go through each individual drug and say possession of cocaine is this particular offense. They're not required to use schedules to determine what is and isn't criminal offense. So I'm not sure how the Board of Pharmacy is responsible for our criminal statutes.
Well, there's still statutes that law enforcement and district attorney's offices are relying upon to prosecute defendants based upon the board's scheduling of cannabis as a Schedule 1 substance. I mean, the District Attorney's Association made that clear in its own amicus brief in this case. And so in turn, I think the other thing that's peculiar about this situation is the board's effectively still regulating cannabis, even though the board cannot actually license anyone to use cannabis. So that's something they emphasized over and over again in their brief. Oh, we're limited to pharmacies and pharmacists. But the reality is they can't actually license a pharmacist to distribute cannabis. That's entirely in the control of the Cannabis Compliance Board. So these regulations are solely for criminalization at this time, when the idea of scheduling cannabis.
I want to circle back to...
I'm sorry.
You finish and then
Thank you. No, it precludes that, right? Because if they made it a lower schedule, then... theoretically, pharmacies could, right? Doctors could prescribe and pharmacies could provide marijuana. I mean, there are forms of it that they do.
So, Your Honor, I don't believe that's accurate in this state. The reason why is that the 2016 initiative made it so only the Department of Taxation could license people to distribute cannabis. And so it actually has to go through a separate entity, the medical facility. And I don't think there's an exception that allows the Board of Pharmacy to then license pharmacists to distribute cannabis in the state. I think that power only
does that weigh towards it being a Schedule 1 substance?
No, Your Honor. I think that weighs towards them not being able to schedule it all because they have no regulatory authority over something they can't even license their pharmacists to distribute.
Okay. I wanted to circle back to standing. And if this is entirely of criminal consequence, what do you say to your friend across the aisle's argument that this is suitable for direct appeal or a habeas corpus petition if you've been convicted, and that would be your exclusive remedy? So there isn't standing in the conventional sense in this case. What do you say to that?
So the fact that other people could potentially seek, and I'm talking specifically from the perspective of CEIC in this situation, The fact that somebody else could potentially seek a remedy through a criminal case does not preclude CEIC from seeking declaratory relief here. And I don't think
but it what is it standing? Are you arguing that it has representational, like associational standing on behalf of it, of people that it's trying to help? Because the premise is that you're trying to help people who have been convicted and will be convicted under these statutes.
And so, Your Honor, we'd actually argue that they have standing under all three theories that the district court found down below. So that'd be public importance, organizational, and representational. I think that's a potential issue with representational. That's correct, Your Honor. If, but at the same time, if somebody they were a member has the ability to seek relief in this fashion, they also would be able to seek relief as representational standing as well.
But if, so Mr. Poole has a conviction.
Correct, Your Honor.
A post-constitutional change conviction for marijuana, and is that conviction premised on it having to be a Schedule I for that particular conviction?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So then going back to the argument that's being made that that can only be challenged, if the challenge being made is that it's unconstitutional to list marijuana as Schedule One, the habeas statute would suggest that, in fact, habeas is the exclusive method for him to challenge the constitutionality of that conviction. Why isn't that right?
So as far as Mr. Poole is concerned, he would most likely need to go back and petition, give post-conviction relief. But as of right now, he'd be time barred unless there's a change of law in this court. I'd also just observe that if CEIC is standing, Mr. Poole would presumably have standing to bring suit. Typically, you only need one plaintiff to have standing for this.
Well, how's that going to change his conviction? I mean, he's already been convicted. He's, I guess, out of time to do habeas. How is us granting relief going to redress his harm? I don't understand, like, even if we said today, take it off of Schedule One, don't regulate marijuana anymore, what does Mr. Poole get out of that?
So a change in the law is grounds for good cause to seek a petition, even if it's past the time. That's something that this court has previously determined.
How do we reconcile? So we've talked a lot about 453, 166, but the other statutes, and just speaking to scheduling alone, the other statutes in 453, 2182, 2186, 2188, that seem to imply that the board has an obligation to schedule in line with federal law and the Controlled Substances Act, which would leave marijuana as a Schedule One controlled substance. So kind of invoking some supremacy clause arguments on the scheduling issue. I mean, how do we reconcile that?
Well, there's actually statutes on point as well that allow the board to object to the federal scheduling and actually schedule substances on a different schedule than what the federal government's doing. They also may consider what the FDA and the DEA have done, but they're not required to do that in their fact-finding determination related to a particular schedule. So they're not bound to what the federal government's doing. And as we put it in our brief, other states have actually removed cannabis from their schedules, and they've also moved it down off of Schedule One. And to our knowledge, they still have pharmacies in those places.
It's because everybody's getting a little tired of waiting for Congress to act, right?
I still have a minute. So I think that I would just simply point out at this point that CEIC clearly satisfies at least the public importance doctrine. Again, the board did not even contest that in its opening brief, which under this court's typical ruling would be a waiver of that issue. The board could not regulate cannabis as a Schedule One substance and comply with NRS 453.166.
Did the district court find that it did satisfy the public importance exception?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Comply with NRS 453.166 without violating Article 4, Section 38. And the board no longer has the authority to regulate cannabis. It simply has not had a role in the comprehensive plan that's laid out in Title 56 that covers every aspect of the cannabis trade. And in fact, the way they currently regulate it conflicts with the basic premises related to that it can be safely distributed, it can be used for medical purposes, and in fact, it can even be safely used for recreational purposes as well. At that, I will consider the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, Brad Camp, for the record, in brief rebuttal. On the issue of standing, the public importance doctrine
only applies if this is a separation of powers case, which means in every instance where a state agency is accused of exceeding its statutory authority, it's a separation of powers case.
Did you raise that argument in your opening brief?
I'm sorry?
Did you raise that argument that public importance standing should not apply in your opening brief?
We challenge the applicability of the public interest doctrine in court.
Okay.
On to the merits, this case really turns upon interpreting the statutory term accepted medical use and treatment in the United States. And
finish your thought.
Thank you. And the Board of Pharmacy, per its statutory direction from the legislature, largely defers to the federal government's determination on that and often approves and reschedules somewhere in Schedule 2 through 5 FDA-approved drugs that contain cannabinoids. So they rely upon the federal expertise, the federal resources to conduct scientific research, conduct clinical trials and studies, and make these purely scientific determinations. What should be scientific determinations as to whether a drug has accepted medical use in treatment in the United States on the basis of science? In this instance, CEIC and Mr. Poole came to the court positing it to the court as a legal question, and the court ruled upon it as a legal question with no scientific basis whatsoever. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This matter